We've really gone through enough to call it a day. You've seen iPhone 6 and iPhone 6 Plus. They're absolutely incredible. And a whole new category of service with Apple Pay. But we're not quite finished yet. We have one more thing.
Podcast, the best 30-plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. I'm your host, Erfan Elijah, joined today by a man who was actually front row center at the Apple events, screaming for Bono like a little girl. I'm, of course, talking about Leander Caney. Welcome back, Leander.
Thank you, Erfan.
I'm sure yesterday was an insane day for you.
Yeah, it was a busy day.
Buster, he's not just a pretty face. He also has lots of expert Apple opinions he's going to share with us today. Buster Kine is joining us.
Hey, dude.
So sultry. This is going to be a great show. The one we've been waiting for, arguably, for the last 2 years as we stalled waiting for this event. We're going to be telling you our impressions of the new iPhone 6s. We're going to be talking about Apple Pay and if we think it'll take over the world. And it's great because, you know, Leander was actually at the Apple event. He's going to give us his hands-on impressions of these devices and not just my cutout template iPhone 6 hands-on impressions. We'll talk about that.
Just the printout you made, yeah.
The one that I printed on my printer and then just held lovingly. We're also going to be talking about the Apple Watch, but more than anything else, we all have a big decision to make, right? Which iPhone is right for you? That's the topic that we're all wrestling with. Are you going to get a 4.7? Are you going to get a 5.5? We will hopefully be helping you make that decision as we're making that decision ourselves right now. So before we hop into everything, I want to thank our sponsors, Lynda.com, for supporting this episode with over 2,400 high-quality video courses for you to choose from, taught by industry-leading experts. Lynda.com will help you master virtually any application all on your own time and at your own pace. And hey, guess what? You can actually watch them on your iPhone, on your iPad when you're on the go. Check it out for a 7-day free trial. Head on over to lynda.com/cultcast. That's lynda.com/cultcast. I also want to thank Smile Software for supporting this episode. Did you know with PDF Pen Scan Plus, you can take a picture of virtually any piece of paper, and Scan Plus will actually create an OCR'd PDF that you can search, that you can share with people that you work with or your friends and family. It's one of those tools that I use often because I always find I need to like keep track of receipts or little bits of paper, and plus being able to search them later is hugely, hugely beneficial. Check it out yourself. Head on over to smilesoftware.com/cultcast and you can see PDF Pen Scan Plus in action. They have a bunch of great videos and more information. I want to thank Smile Software for supporting this episode. Okay, Leander, let's just start right from the top.
Okay.
We, in the morning, it just looked like a zoo outside of Flint Center. And describe the feeling in the room, because Apple has hyped this event up. They had a countdown on their page that everyone was taken to. It was redirected. So everyone was kind of like counting down, waiting for this thing to begin. What was it like in that room? What was the feeling?
It was cool. Yeah, it was great. There was, outside they had a corral for the journalists, and there was they had a 2-hour check-in. So I got there about 8 a.m.
Holy smokes.
And, took a couple of pictures of the big white box. It was like, they had all these T-shirted Apple staffers, you know, like every 10 feet.
So yeah, cheering for you?
Yeah, they were doing a little bit of cheering, and there was definitely upbeat. I took some pictures, got some coffee, and then there was a huge line. There was a big crowd over to the side, and I'm like, who are all those people? And they were, oh, those are all the Apple employees. And they were the ones who were really buzzing, because like journalists, you know, they're all sort of jaded and
they're like, this is going to suck.
Yeah, they're hungover, yeah. You know, and they just want to eat a donut. And but there was,
you're speaking from personal experience, I think.
There was like, the funny thing was, there was a bunch of like, there were some really, really, really well-dressed people, like, you know, and they were like, oh, wow, these must be all the fashion journalists and all the lifestyle journalists. And there was a lot of those. There was like a couple of hundred journalists, and as it came towards the time, they're all crowding into this big space. And I unfortunately went to the back. I had to go to the bathroom, so by the time I got back, there was this huge block of people, and I had been right at the very front talking to my friend, and so I had to, like a salmon, I had to go through the stream and, like, fight my way through. And they were really kind of, there were some really aggressive people in there, like, no, you know, hey, dude, what's going on?
Well,
I have to get to my colleagues up the front, excuse me.
I'm sure everyone said that, it was trying to cut.
Yeah, right. But it actually turned out to be the wrong move because the people at the front got put at the back. They started filling up the rows from the back.
Uh-huh. Mm.
And so, I would have been better off at the back because then I would have got, near the front.
I was going to say that would describe why the picture I saw from you in the audience was like, it was like to count how many rows were in front of you and I lost track.
I know, it was a nosebleed seats.
Did it feel like a historic event? Because that was kind of how it was touted.
Yeah. There was definitely a feeling of history because there's a great legacy there at the Flint Center because this is where Jobs introduced the first Macintosh and then the iMac, and they were definitely referencing that and that was when Tim straight off the bat when he was talking after he introduced the iPhones when he was talking about the Apple Watch he was like this is the venue this is the venue where we've seen some historic introductions, and Apple has introduced. Four big, and it was certainly about the interfaces, like the UI that they use with the products, and this is why they become historical. And he was referencing the original Mac, and then the iPod, and then iOS with multi-touch, and then this is the next step, the next chapter in Apple's history is this, the new interface of the iWatch, and which is the interface for wearables.
So you knew something big was coming.
Yeah, there was a lot of buzz, and the Apple employees, when they were coming in, it was just like the Apple store opening. They were all high-fiving each other and whooping and screaming. And
lots of white guys high-fiving. I love it.
Yeah. Well, there were a lot of women there, and it was... there were people were standing up and sort of taking their picture of selfies with the Apple backdrop. So there was definitely a buzz, but it was pretty quick. I mean, there was a lot of time before the thing started.
Oh, the stream was so bad. I mean,
it was
so bad. At one point, they basically just switched over to the Chinese audio stream, or I guess video stream, because there was Chinese dubbed over Phil Schiller. And I remember tweeting, I didn't realize that Phil Schiller's Chinese was so impeccable. I got more retweets than I ever have in my entire life. I guess everyone was watching the Chinese stream.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, it's like if you weren't actually in the room, you missed a large portion of what was happening there because it kept showing this TV truck schedule.
Yeah.
And that actually, I think, started becoming like a minor trending topic on Twitter because TV truck schedule, lunch break, 1:15.
It was funny because he was right into it too. It was like, hey, normally we do a bunch of updates and we give you some numbers and a rundown. And he's like, we've got so much to show you today that we're just going to skip all that. And he said, don't worry, everything's great.
Everything's great. Let's move on, y'all. I noticed that too. That was one of the parts that I actually caught was no small talk, just like boom. Right. And I was right from the start, I was thinking they have a lot to announce here.
Well, for the new iPhone 6s right off the bat, it's going to be
great. That's what you're starting with? Yeah, exactly. Well, the rumors were all true. We got two new iPhones, as you all know, three models of Apple iWatch. We got Apple Pay. We even got U2. I mean, literally every rumor that we've been talking about for weeks and weeks and weeks, I was just checking them off one by one. I do want to mention, we did something a little fun. We asked everyone on Twitter and on our Facebook page, facebook.com/TheCultCast. The Cultcast, thank you, to send in their impressions of the event and what they liked about the products, and we're going to edit those in at the end of the show. And we also will have some surprise guest opinions. So stay tuned to the end of the show for those. Thank you for everyone who contributed those. Let's start with the iPhones. That's where Apple started, Leander. Right from the get-go, like we said, boom! Here are new iPhones. Right off the top, we should say they're available for pre-order on the 12th and in stores on the 18th. Yes. Do you guys know?
Yeah. I suppose it wasn't the 19th. It was the 19th.
It's on the 19th. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for correcting me, Leander. When they were announced in the room, it looked like everyone just went absolutely ape shit.
Today, we are launching the biggest advancement in the history of iPhone.
There was guys showing their nipples to Tim Cook. I mean, it was like insane. What was it like? Was the energy actually like that when he announced these things?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. People were really, jazzed to see this. Even though like all the parts leaks and everyone sort of knew it was coming. I mean, but it's still nice to sort of see it there and see that see it officially. And they really do look amazing. Like I think the hardware is so good now. Mm-hmm. And for $600, like a mini computer that is that powerful and can do those many things. It's a piece of technological magic.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got to pick them up, you know, they're super light. I mean, it's funny. They do make the iPhone 5, the 5S, look like a, you know.
Just feel like a piece of trash.
Yeah, and fat and heavy.
Uh-huh.
Because they're much lighter, even the big 5.5 inch. I can't remember if exactly, you know, like the feel. I don't know if it is lighter, but it feels lighter because it feels like a big piece of metal and glass. You know, it's substantial, but it's really, really light, and it's really, really thin, mm-hmm. but it's rigid.
So, and I watched your videos that you posted on Cult of Mac. You took some YouTube videos and stuff, and you said they were very comfortable hold. Would you describe the differences in the feel when you're holding them for the 4.7 and the 5.5?
Well, the 4.7, you know, obviously is a little, because it's a bit smaller, it's comfortable to hold. And the rounded edges and the rounded glass on the front makes it very, you know, you're not catching. I think with a big, if they'd made it sharp like the iPhone 5, mm-hmm. it might have dug into your flesh a bit because of the size of it. Maybe not, but you know, the rounded corners.
No, I think you might be right, because it's so huge. Like, you just, it's kind of like pressing against your skin.
Yeah, right. The rounded corners definitely help, and especially with the big, the 5.5 one, you know, it definitely helps make it really comfortable in your hand.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, the problem is the one-handed use. You know, how do you stretch your thumb up? And on the 5.5, there's, you know, even like a long, you know, kind of my long withered thumb, you know, couldn't really get all the way up there, even halfway up the screen. So they have this new feature now where you can just double press. You don't double tap. You don't press the home button all the way down. You just tap lightly on it, like a double click.
Yeah.
And it shrinks the interface. It shrinks the screen halfway down. And then, you know, then it's really easy. It's actually perfect. It's almost, you know, like it was, oh, wow, it's right there, at the, you know, as far as my thumb can move.
So you're talking about the reachability feature.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you found that to be intuitive because, as Leander mentioned, you double touch the home screen and it brings the home button. It brings the screen down so you can, you know, reach the top buttons and icons and stuff. I've heard mixed reviews so far. Some people said it was a really big cop out and they didn't like it at all. And some people said it was an effective way to use like a giant iPhone with one hand. So what was your impression?
I think it'll take a little bit of getting used to. You know, the first time I did it, I double clicked it, so I went to the home screen and then. You know, so it didn't work, and then but then when I you know, I had to constantly think about it a couple of times, tap tap, and it worked fine, you know, and it worked every time. The only problem I had was that you have to double tap and it shrinks down the icons. Then you tap on the app you want to use, mm-hmm. and it goes back to full screen. So then you have to double tap it again, and then it shrinks the interface for the app you're in. Halfway down,
mm-hmm.
and then if you press the you know, say the a text box to put in a URL or type a message, it goes back up again. So it's not persistent. That was the problem I had.
That was a similar thing that I heard echoed by other people. It's like, it's fine if you just want to do one tap,
right.
But if you need to actually keep typing, then as soon as you type the first key, the screen pops back up, and you have to keep double touching the home screen button.
I hope it's just an oversight, and it's something they'll fix, you know, fairly quickly, because you know, I was doing a lot of double tapping on that bottom to try to get something done, you know, just writing a simple message.
Let's run through some of the features real fast of these two phones. So the 4.7 inch. Actually, both these phones have a lot of these features, the 4.7 and the 5.5. New generation Retina HD display, 326 PPI screen for the 4.7. Leander, did you notice a marked improvement over your current phone and this new phone?
You know, to be honest, I'm as blind as a bat, and I can't tell between a Retina screen and a regular screen, unless I look really carefully.
Uh-huh.
I know there were people who would, like, really... I know there's a big debate about this before the launch, and I know a lot of people are really discerning. But, you know, I just saw a really big... really beautiful, really detailed, sharp screen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I didn't do that kind of pixel to Steve Jobsy and pixel to pixel comparison. But, yeah, what I saw looked really nice.
It's supposed to have a wider viewing angle, too, so you should be able to see it from, you know, a greater angle away from, like, just, like, dead center. 38% more pixels than the 5S. That's for the 4.7. 6.9 millimeters thin to the iPhone 5S is 7.6.
It's thin. It's really thin.
When you turn it sideways, can you still see it, Leander?
It's like a credit card. It's kind of crazy thin. You think, like,
thin, is it?
It's really pretty. It is thin. I mean, you know how the 5S feels when you have it out of a case and you just have it in your hand?
That's how I roll, dude.
It seems crazy thin. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's even
thinner. I like a nude.
It's crazy. I haven't had mine out of a case for a long time, so I was surprised at how thin it was. But yeah, it's even thinner than the 5S.
By the way, Buster, I know I keep going to Leander with these questions since he was there, but you feel free to pipe in. Interrupt me at any time. He's just like, not even going to say anything now. He's just shaking his head now. He's like, no. Apple A8 64-bit chip, same as the other iPhone, which is supposed to be 50% more efficient than the A7 and up to 25% faster. New M8 Motion coprocessor, which adds a barometer, so hopefully we'll be able to tell when it's about to rain. camera improvements. You know, the camera seems to be pretty similar. This will obviously
I don't think so. No, the camera looks like a really big step up.
For the 4.7?
They
added some extra features, but as far as the megapixels, they're the same. The pixel pitch, which is the size of the pixels, are the same.
They've also, you know, added improved, like, backgrounding or something like that.
Which does what?
I have no idea. Noise reduction.
I still want it.
supposedly, they rebuilt the sensor, but yeah, I'm with you. It sounds like it's the exact same camera almost.
Well, the dude there at the demo station showed me a couple of pictures. He showed me a couple of pictures they've been taking. Said there was a really good low light and it was really good autofocus and it was a lot sharper in low light situations. And
yeah.
I don't know, based on the pictures he showed me, which obviously were taken by a professional, it still did look pretty good.
Yeah.
240 frames per second, 720p or 720 slow-mo video. So that's HD slow-mo. Does the 5S have HD slow-mo video?
Yeah.
Does it really? Is it 720?
It's
120, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Continuous autofocus. This will be cool for people that have lots of kids running around and need to constantly focus on different faces. Leander, looking at you.
Does that mean it's going to be wandering autofocus, though?
It could be, yeah. So whenever someone jumps into the screen to make a face, it'll focus on them instead. Or if someone's mooning you, it'll focus in just sharp on their butt cheeks. you're doing like a scene and someone drives by with their butt cheeks in the window and it's like just automatically focuses on those. People probably won't be as excited about this as I am. 802.11ac Wi-Fi standard. Finally, we get this. I've been waiting forever, which means the connection between an 802.11ac router and these iPhones will be much faster. Your Wi-Fi transmissions should happen much quicker. And I think it even increases like the effective broadcast range. So you'll be able to be farther away from your router and still have faster transmission speeds. That's huge. We talked about this last show and on previous shows, 16 gigabytes, 64 gigabytes, and 128 gigabytes of storage. 16 seems a little bit odd, guys. Yes, Buster?
Yeah, I do think that was odd. I feel like that's cheap, you know, because I think most people are going to want that. I think it just forces most people to pay for the 64 gig, you know?
Yeah, I think that's probably exactly what it is. And I was kind of theorizing, if you get a 16 gigabyte iPhone, if you're buying the base one, you probably don't even know what a gigabyte is anyway.
Yeah.
Like, what's a gigabyte? I only need 16. So that's going to be fine for me. But you're right, Buster. It's probably a ploy to get people to spend the extra $100. Mm-hmm. Although I feel better about spending the extra $100 now because instead of getting 32 gigabytes, you're getting 64.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that would have cost you $200 before. You know what? Before we hop into the iPhone 5.5-inch, I should call it the iPhone 6 Plus. I'm so bummed they didn't call it the iPhone Air. That was a missed opportunity. Before we jump into that and talk about which phones we're going to get, I do want to thank our sponsor, Lynda.com, for supporting this episode. I love Lynda. .com. Come on. You're not going to crack, Leander. I gave that like 10 seconds. Lynda.com is great. And the reason I love it is because they have so many high quality of video courses for you to choose from. I'm a big advocate of continual learning. And guess what? When iOS 8 comes out, when Yosemite comes out, I forgot the name for a moment, Lynda's going to be first to get their videos out, and they'll have a complete course for that you can choose from to learn the intricacies, the ins and outs of both of those operating systems. And they're often the first when new applications come out because they have partnerships with like Adobe and various other companies. So they're working on their tutorials before these applications come out. So when they actually do, you can hop on and immediately begin learning about those applications and improving your skill sets, which, you know, when you're in technology, you have got to be improving your skill sets all the time because there's always stuff coming out. Well, not only can you learn on your computer, with Lynda.com, you can hop on your iPad with Lynda's free iPad app and iPhone app. and learn on the go wherever you are. That, of course, makes it super easy to jump in and out of courses and learn on your own time, which is one of the best parts of Lynda. You just hop in, learn when you can, hop out, come back later, revisit topics. And because Lynda's videos are all closed captioned, you can actually search for anything that was spoken in any of the courses to find the segment that you're trying to get back to again to rewatch it later. I just love Lynda.com. And if you're trying to keep your skills sharp, if you're trying to learn Photoshop, maybe you're trying to learn about design or business, go check out lynda.com/cultcast. That's lynda.com/cultcast. You'll get a 7-day free trial to learn all you want and see for yourself why I always say I love lynda.com. All right, guys, on to the 5.5-inch iPhone 6 Plus. I wish they had called it the iPhone Air so I could gloat to Alex E. Heath, but it's the iPhone 6 Plus. It has a 1920 by 1080 Retina HD resolution, 401 PPI screen, 185% more pixels than the 5S. And the cool part is that they added like a second pane to some apps. So, and I think developers can probably build this in.
Yeah.
So it actually gets a whole extra pane of information. Leander, did you see any apps that featured that?
I played with the messaging app, and it's just like on the iPad. You know, it brings up that window on the left with all your contacts.
Yeah. Did you find it great. Eminently useful? Because I'm not sure I would really get much use out of that.
Yeah, you know, I can see it being useful if you can, remember that it's there to use it.
Well, it's cool that you can finally use the home screen in landscape mode as well, because I always try to do that on my iPhone, and I always forget that that doesn't actually work.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So the big question here is, which phone is right for you? Leander, you and I have been coveting an iPhone the size of a Samsung phablet for many months now, for many moons. Now we have the option, and now I'm kind of not so sure what I want.
Me neither.
Which one do you want?
Oh, really?
Which one do you want, Buster?
Oh, I'm going for the phablet all the way.
Are you really? Yeah. What's your logic there?
It would replace my iPad mini, mostly. Also, the camera's a little bit better. Mm-hmm. And why not just have a TV in your pocket?
So we mentioned optical image stabilization is part of the iPhone 6 Plus, which is obviously a big deal for low light pictures because it should mean that they're much sharper. So no hard decision for Buster. He's all about the big one.
Yeah, go big or go home.
Leander, I kind of feel like we don't have a choice. I feel like no matter what happens, you and I and a lot of people are just going to end up with the bigger one just because we need to have the thing that has the most features, even if they're features that we'll never actually use.
You're right. And like Buster, you know, like I want that big screen, and I feel like and there's better battery life too. The battery life is a lot better.
That's actually a great point. Yeah, in some applications up to like 20, 30, 40% better than the regular iPhone 6. Although we'll see how that actually plays out in real time, you know, when we're actually using it every day.
Yeah, but like you say, I mean, I'm definitely going to get the bigger one, the biggest one. But I'm just wondering whether I'll get buyer's, you know, remorse a few weeks down the line.
Wish that you had something that would fit in your pocket.
Yeah.
That's exactly how I feel. Like, I'm holding this paper template. By the way, I don't know if we mentioned this. Ars Technica released these great paper templates. Search the web for them if you want to download
them. We have them on our site. We have a link to
them. Oh, do you? Excellent. On cultamac.com. And you can print them out, and then they're life-size replications of, you know, how big the iPhone will be. So I've been holding this stupid paper template in my hand for the last 24 hours trying to figure out what I'm going to do. And it's, I mean, the iPhone 6 Plus, when you hold it in your hand, at least from the paper template, it's hard to reach the corners. And I find it a bit awkward to hold and actually use at the same time. Leander, did you find that it was awkward to hold in any way?
No, not really, no. And neither to use, you know, except for that problem with stretching your thumb up to the top icons, you know, which, what's it called? I can't remember the name of the feature, but the shrinking...
Reachability.
Yeah. Right, which that solves. And I think in a lot of cases, you often use your phone, you know, with both hands anyway. Obviously, you use it with one hand too, but no, it was easy to hold, and it was easy to do a lot of things with one hand.
It felt to me, as I was holding the template, that if I were to try to attempt to do things with just one hand, it made it feel like unsafe in my hand, like I might drop it. Is that a sensation you experience when you're trying to one-hand it?
No, I think it's a sensation you get with the smaller phones, you know, where actually sort of a little fiddlier.
So... you're going for the 5.5 then?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, decision made. I feel like, I honestly don't feel like I have a choice. I feel like I'm drawn to the 5.5 like a bug to one of those like bug lamps. I'm going to get zapped when I get too close. But that's honestly how I feel. The 4.7 right. looks awesome. And I think I was holding the 4.7 template up to my iPhone 5.
Yeah, you know,
it felt very similar in size.
It is. It's plenty big, and it's a really, really nice phone. It's plenty big, in fact. You know, the screen is the screen itself is almost as big as the entire 5S.
Well, one of the things I heard about the bigger phone too, Leander, is that the actual size of the screen is downscaled a little bit. So some people were complaining that resulted in choppy animations when you're going from portrait to landscape mode, or when you were, you know, viewing animations when apps launched and that type of thing. Did you notice anything there?
No, what are they not talking at all? About?
There's probably some guy there with like a jeweler's eyepiece on.
Yeah,
and he's like precisely. Looking at it as it's opening and closing.
Right, he's filming in 240 frames per second and clicking through every single one to see if there's the slightest bit of, you know,
slightest bit of choppiness whatsoever.
No, I didn't notice anything wrong with it. It was fast and responsive. I mean, you know, but like I said, I'm as blind as a bat, so maybe I'm not the best person to be judging this, but no, I didn't see anything like that.
So
you know, one thing with a 5.5 though, you might think about is because at the moment I use a BookBook wallet case,
yeah,
which hopefully I can with Apple Pay I can almost get rid of that, but I still have my driver's license,
yeah.
But I'm wondering whether if I have an accessory like that with a 5.5, I mean, it's gonna be like carrying around the full size BookBook that you can put your computer in.
Yeah, it's going to be, and that's a great point too, and I've heard some people mention that. With this thing in a case, it's going to be ginormous.
Yeah.
It's barely, I was talking to Adam Christensen from MacCast, and he said, somebody out there said it was like carrying a skateboard in their pocket. It's so huge. And then you put this thing inside of a case, and it's like you wouldn't be able to sit down, or this thing is going to be like wedged between your thigh and your wiener. It's not going to feel good. It's going to cut off the circulation for critical components of the body. So that's the one thing that I'm worried about, because Buster and I, our jeans are pretty skinny. Buster, you're still into this whole skinny jean thing, right?
Dude, too much, yeah.
He could barely carry like a credit card in his wallet, let alone a 5.5-inch iPhone. And that's honestly, I know that sounds silly, but that is one of the things I'm actually concerned about, is am I going to have to start carrying around like a fanny pack?
Yeah, you are.
Or a MERS.
Cool. Yeah.
And I say that hoping that that's the case.
Well, where do you put it now? Which pocket do you use?
I put it in my right pocket, and I feel like the iPhone 5 as it is already kind of long. You know, like when you sit down, you can feel it in there. And this, I mean, the 5.5 is going to be way bigger. But let's face it, none of that matters. All that matters is the 5.5 has all the tech that's the newest and best. So I'm probably going to go with that one too. So are we all 5.5s?
Yeah.
There you go.
It's okay.
What?
Alex told me he's going to go 4.7. So.
Well, yeah. You've seen Alex's hands.
Yeah.
Even with the 4.7, that's going to be a two-hander for him. I don't really feel like he has much choice there. Hopefully that helped you guys. I know there's a big decision. I know that sounds stupid because it's not really that big of a deal in the scheme of life. But, you know, a lot of us are going to be pre-ordering without seeing this thing.
Right.
And so you kind of got to make your decision now, because if you don't pre-order it, it's not going to be available until, you know, July of 2016. You're going to be waiting, you know, forever to get your hands on it. So you kind of need to make your decision now and lock in your pre-order.
Right.
Pre-orders happen Thursday night, Friday morning. If you want to stay up late Thursday, I would probably just do it that way and get your order in so that you're not backed up for 2 months. Because does anyone not think this is going to be an absolutely huge hit and then Apple's going to sell a million of these things?
Yeah, I think they'll sell as many as they can make.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Exactly.
And more, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's
going to be a short supply.
Yeah, especially with these big screens being so in demand for so long, I think they're going to be in short supply as well. So let us know which one you decide to get. Head on over to our Facebook page, facebook.com/theCultCast. I would be interested to hear what you guys think. Let's talk about Apple Pay.
A truly mobile wallet has long been described as imminent, but it remains elusive. Most have been a disappointment or have not yet worked well enough for mainstream adoption. Why is this? It's because, as it turns out, most people that have worked on this have started by focusing on creating a business model that was centered around their self-interest instead of focusing on the user experience.
We love this kind of problem. This is exactly what Apple does best. And so we've created an entirely new payment process, and we call it Apple Pay.
This is a this was a rumor that we heard about a week before they actually announced it. This is Apple's attempt to bring mobile payments to ubiquitous use here in the U.S. as it is kind of like in Japan and stuff. It looked really cool. The demo they showed, if it works as easily as it looked in the demo, looked really amazing.
Okay, your total is $23.78.
That's it!
Leander, what are your impressions of That's Apple it. Pay? Is this going to take over your wallet?
Yeah, well, you know, I'd love to ditch my cards. So I hope so. But, you know, I went, I had to run a couple of errands this morning, and I had to pay my, you know, like, I had about three interactions. I had to put some money in a parking meter, then I had to get some coffee at a little coffee shop, and then I had to go into a parking garage. Mm-hmm. And all those places, I was like, you know, would I be able to do this with an Apple Pay card? I doubt it. So, you know, I think it's going to be great when you go to the Apple Store or to Disneyland and a bunch of other places.
Or to both in the same day.
Yeah, right. So it's going to be great, you know, when you go to those places. But then everywhere else, you know, would you be able to use it? It's only going to be really useful when it becomes ubiquitous, like it is in Japan and in Europe.
Yeah, that's really true. It looked incredible. And The Verge had some hands-on video of it, and I think Nilay Patel was the one using, and he was having the phone hovering above this little, you know, NFC pad, and it took about 10 seconds for the transaction to go through, and all he had to do is, you know, scan his thumbprint on the Touch ID pad, and it worked. And it was just as easy to switch credit cards and stuff, so the whole process looks really seamless. But yeah, are you going to be able to use it with, you know, parking meters? Not a chance, not anytime soon. Are you going to be able to use it at the stores that you frequent that aren't Staples? What was it, like CVS and McDonald's? Like a lot of these places they announced, I don't really shop at.
Yeah.
And
but a lot of people do, though, so.
Yeah, I mean, man, if you love McDonald's, your drive-thru wait is probably going to get cut down.
Well, you know, the important thing, I think, was they signed up all the payment partners. You know, MasterCard, Visa, Discover was tweeting today that they've been in talks and they're going to probably get
on board. Oh, really? That's actually the one I was curious about the most, because that's the card I use the most.
Yeah, right. So, you know, it looks like the whole, you know, the big chunk of the financial industry. I think Tim Cook said that 85% of credit card transactions, the companies that deal with 85% of credit card transactions already signed up. So,
did you get a chance to play around with this at the event, Leander?
No, I didn't. No, I was playing with the other things.
You didn't go over and ring something up?
You know, running through more money through Apple's coffers, you know, wasn't the most exciting thing. I mean, I you know, there was so much to do. I was kind of, you know, it was kind of stressful. I was trying to make videos, which turned out terrible. And, you know,
I thought they were delightful.
Yeah, I ended up talking to some people there. So, you know, I spent most of my time yakking rather than checking out the stuff, I guess.
I was supposed to be working, but I ended up just talking to different people.
No, I was talking to some people. I can't say who I was talking to, but I was talking to some Apple people. And you know, that was really hugely productive. I'm hoping that, you know, some stuff is going to come out of that. But
does it rhyme with Ronnie Chive?
No. No, it doesn't rhyme with Ronnie Chive.
That's too bad.
What happened there?
Did you hear me? Hello.
No.
Can you guys hear me?
No, something happened there. It broke up.
Okay, but you can hear me now?
Oh, weird.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I would love to see this become ubiquitous. It looked really elegant. Of course, you know, where can you use it is going to be the big thing. And if anyone could negotiate big deals to get this, you know, payment platform spread across the whole U.S., at least a start, Apple could. And I think kind of some of the cool news is, at least for people that own stock, is I was reading today that Apple has actually negotiated a cut of all these transactions.
Oh, wow.
So they're going to be making money off every single payment. That could end up being like a cornerstone of their business, is just making money off financial transactions that we're all out there making. This could be bigger than like the iPhone or the Mac or something. So that's Apple Pay. We had talked about it before. We actually hadn't really heard that much about it. They kept it pretty well under wraps, but I'm very excited about it. And this will actually probably get me to start using Passbook, an app that I probably have opened twice since it's been announced. Yeah. Do you guys actually ever use it for anything?
No.
No. I don't either. Yeah. Well, maybe you will now that your credit cards will be stored in there. Obviously, we need to talk about the... I want to keep calling it the iWatch. In fact, even Tim Cook in a recent interview called it the iWatch.
Right.
Now it's called the Apple Watch.
That's an interesting debate why they called it. They called Apple Pay, Apple Pay. You know, they're starting to use the... And it's not Apple. It's an icon.
It looks kind of weird too in their site navigation because there's like the iPhone, the iPod, and then it just says watch.
It's kind of funky.
We'll talk about that new naming convention as well. Before we move on though, I want to thank Smile Software and PDF Pen Scan Plus for supporting this conversation. Dudes, one of the most important things I do with my iPhone is scan documents. You know, like when you have a receipt or if you have an invoice or you have something that you need to digitize and you're kind of like at your kitchen table or somewhere where you don't have access to a scanner, PDF Pen Scan Plus is super handy because it allows you to just take a picture, whatever document you're looking at. It will auto crop it so that just the document that you've taken a picture of, not like whatever it's sitting on, will be transformed into a PDF. And the best part is it will actually OCR the entire document. So all the words and everything that are in the document become instantly searchable. So you can, you know, search for them and find them later. It also allows you to copy and paste all the text from the document into an email, into another PDF, anywhere that you can copy and paste text. You can use these OCR characters and paste them there. It also saves all these... different PDFs that you create into really popular storage systems like Dropbox, into Evernote. You can store them in Box or send them over FTP. It's one of those super useful apps that once you have it on your phone or your iPad, it's a universal app. You'll find that you'll use it quite often to just keep track of documents and digitize things that you don't want to have filed somewhere so you can keep them in a digital file system. Check it out. Head on over to smilesoftware.com/cultcast, and they have a bunch of videos there and more material that you can read about and get a feel for what the application can actually do. I think it's a fantastic program. It's available as a universal app, as I mentioned, for iPhone and iPad. So once you pay your $7, which is how much the app costs, you'll have it available on both platforms. And you'll probably use it, you know, once, twice a day like I do. And I want to thank Smile Software for supporting this episode. And that's smilesoftware.com/cultcast. Okay, guys, the moment we've all been waiting for. Apple has officially unveiled the Apple Watch.
We love to make great products that really enrich people's lives. We love to integrate hardware, software, and services seamlessly. We love to make technology more personal and allow our users to do things that they could never have imagined. We've been working incredibly hard for a long time on an entirely new product. And we believe this product will redefine what people expect from its category. I am so excited, and I am so proud to share it with you this morning. It is the next chapter in Apple's story, and here it is.
Available in three editions, the regular watch, the sport edition, and the edition.
Yeah, so weird.
Yeah, so let's talk about, before we talk about the actual features of the phone, our impressions. There's a lot of hype behind this product, obviously. Buster, you and I kind of chatted about this yesterday.
Yeah.
They released it. They were showing it. They were talking about the features. What were you thinking?
I thought it looked too close to like all the concepts I had seen. I was expecting something, I guess, radically different. Mm-hmm. But it was just, you know, a very like refined and perfected smartwatch based on, you know, a lot of the ideas out there, and they have a lot of like cool new things, and so I think there's a lot of potential there, but I don't think like Apple, like, you know, hit it out of the park per se yet on the smartwatch.
Leander, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm with Buster. I was like, oh really, it looks like the Galaxy Gear Watch.
It doesn't. You know, do you think it looks like that? I don't think it resembles that very much.
And you know, the
it's
out of
similar
case.
Though. It's a yeah. watch, you know, and I wasn't expecting it to be a watch, you know.
Right. I know. I thought they were going to have a range of like crazy things, you know, like these clasps that almost like, you know, automatically wrapped themselves around your wrist and then closed up on their own. Yeah. Because some of the concepts were crazy. I mean, the mock-ups, you know, that people have put out there. So I filled my head with all these, like, mad, you know, Minority Report type, you know, really futuristic technology. And then it looks like a watch. Okay.
I do think it's the best take on it, though, you know. Like, it's really smartly done, but it's just a little disappointing that it's in a watch form factor.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you guys. I wouldn't say I'm disappointed, but I was a little underwhelmed when they started showing it off. And I think, kind of echoing what both of you said, I was not expecting there to be such a small emphasis on the fitness aspect. I thought they were going to come out and say, hey, look, it's a watch. Great. Now that we have that all out of the way, here are all the great fitness things that it does. And we're going to talk about that for the next, you know, 30 minutes. But instead, they spent a lot of time on how the watch looked, like the clock functionality.
Animated GIFs.
Animated GIFs.
Or animated emojis, that's what they're called. There was just, yeah, there were some weird features, that's all. There's some interesting features. The digital crown, I wasn't expecting that, you know. And the feeling your friend's heartbeat, that's kind of weird.
So that was the thing about it that kind of threw me off. So like I said, I was expecting Apple to come out and tell us why we all needed an Apple smartwatch, okay? And they did that, and I left the keynote thinking, I'm not really sure why I would want this. Like, the heartbeat stuff, kind of cool, I guess. Not really sure if I would want to use that. Drawing pictures on the screen and sending them to my friends, not really sure I would use that. I did like the crown navigation. I think that seemed pretty intuitive, you know, by navigating with that little kind of like winding wheel on the side. It looked pretty good, but as far as the fitness aspects are concerned, that was the part I was most excited about. I wanted to know how this was going to revolutionize the fitness world, how people were going to use this to get a lot healthier. And they did share some of that information.
Yeah.
But aside from that, those fitness features, I didn't really see anything that made a compelling case to want to own one.
Yeah, they weren't revolutionary features in any way.
Yes.
No, but they've stuck the interface that you're used to seeing in the fitness trackers onto the phone itself, right? So at the moment now, if you have a Jawbone or a Nike wristband, you have to go to your watch or to an iPad to look at, you know, how you've done.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And now they've put that information right onto the watch face.
Yeah, my problem with that is, like, well, I was expecting more sensors-wise, more data, but also, you know, you can get a lot of that info like a Garmin running watch. You can get all your GPS and running data and all of that just like bare bones for about the same price.
Right.
So I didn't think they really like did anything really new as far as fitness goes there yet, except they're just making it available to the masses, which itself is probably a huge feat that's underrated.
And the other thing, too, is some of like the features that aren't fitness-related, like, and I've said this before about the Galaxy Gear. I'm just trying to be fair here. Like, reading your emails, getting your text messages, all that stuff that you would do on a phone, why would I want to have that experience on a screen that's, like, one square inch? See, why would I want to do that?
But I think that not you don't. And but that's the thing about the iWatch, is it will be a million things to a million different people. Is some people will completely turn off the email. Some won't have, you know, iMessage notifications. They'll only use it as a fitness band or as, you know, some other tools that we haven't even thought up yet. I think that's like the potential of the iWatch, is that it's multifaceted and you can just
right.
not use it for that.
That was, I think, their problem during the keynote. The keynote, I think, was a little bit muddled. You know, they were using the same basic structure that Steve Jobs used when he introduced the iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
And remember when he said it was the iPhone? It's the best iPod,
yeah.
You know, revolutionary internet device. And he sort of chose three features and said, yeah, you know, it's not three devices, it's one. And
yeah.
And they were trying to do the same thing here. I think it has myriad uses because it's an entire platform. It can, you know, do a lot. It can communicate, but also, you know, it can be used for communication, health and fitness, a remote control. I mean, there's a lot of potential there. So I think they were a little bit, you know, they're not really sure what they've got.
I think that's a good point, Leander, because even Tim Cook said, he's like, there's so much more that we couldn't show you because we didn't have time. I think you're right. It was just a little bit muddled. There was not really any one focus.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought the fitness stuff was fairly focused. For that, I was like, okay, that makes sense. You're going to be able to use it to go running and stuff and keep track of, like, how long you stand during the day. But the other features, I'm like, what is all this stuff? Like, besides sending my heartbeat to Buster, right.
And look at the different inputs
that was exciting. What's that, Leander?
Right. Well, and all the inputs as well. I mean, you've got the crown, and there's a button underneath, and then you can press on the screen, or you can swipe on the screen, or you can use Siri. You know, it's like, okay, you know, I mean, it's kind of a little bit confusing. You know, the beauty of the iPod was that there was a wheel that you turned, and then you know, it was dead easy. It's almost, I hate to say it, but a little bit on Apple-like because it's a bit confusing.
It is kind of confusing, and there's a whole new, it is a V1 product. It's definitely a V1 product, right? I mean, this feels like just the beginning, and there's a lot they're going to have to do to make this something that people might lust after. But there's a whole new, like, interaction language that Johnny and I was talking about, which kind of did make sense to me. I think that, like I said, that crown portion of it was, you know, kind of a good way to interact with a screen that's really tiny, and you can't really have your fingertips in there, you know, zooming in and out of stuff, which they said. What are you going to say, Buster?
No, just I like that. Yeah.
Coming early 2015, they didn't say all the different prices. The base model, which I think is the Apple Watch, rather, Sport, the base model. Do you guys know? I think that's the base model.
Yeah, that's the base model, and that one has, like, sapphire glass, and then the...
No, that one doesn't have sapphire glass.
That one has
ion glass display, which makes it more lightweight, and then it has, like, that synthetic strap.
Yes.
And then there's the Apple Watch, just the Apple Watch, which comes
with
stainless
steel. I think the Apple Watch is the base model, and then the Sport and the Edition are upgrades.
See, I heard that the Sport was the base model, and the regular watch was the upgrade, because it has the sapphire screen.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah, I think the Sport one is the base model. That's starting at $350.
But it's confusing because when you go to Apple's website, it lists them in the order of Apple Watch, Sport model, Edition.
Yeah.
So, like, you would think if that wasn't the base model, they would switch those.
Mm. Did you,
obviously, a lot of questions here.
Did you get to play with the working iWatch, Leander, or Apple Watch?
Well, no, and this is like, you know, hands-on gate. There was a bit of a controversy yesterday because they had these staffers. They had three tables with, I think, about eight staffers on each table, so, I don't know, 20-odd watches. And there was a huge crowd. So they had the Apple staffers. They were wearing the watch, and they would show you the functions on it. But then they said, you know, do you want to wear one? And they'd strap it on your wrist, and it would go through a sort of two-minute pre-canned demo. That showed it buzzing.
So it was like a programmatic demo. You couldn't actually interact with it.
Right. And so that blew up on Twitter yesterday. People were accusing Apple of, like, you know, pulling the wool over journalists' eyes and, like, you know, trying to pull a fast one.
They're obviously not done with it yet.
They did the same thing with the iPhone. It wasn't, you couldn't even touch it, you know? It was just that's case.
Yeah, I know. That one was in a case, exactly.
Yeah.
It kind of sounds like we've all made our judgment, but correct me if I'm wrong here. I'm kind of withholding my judgment to the very end when I actually use it. Are you guys kind of in that same place, or have you guys already decided, like, maybe this is not the much-hyped iWatch we were all waiting for?
I'll have to, like, play with it in the store, but I'm definitely not like, oh, I got to get one on launch day.
Yeah. Although we all kind of do have to get one on launch day. But, like, if we didn't need to get one so that we could talk about it, would you spend your hard-earned money? I mean, the base model is $350. Who knows how much they're going to cost from there?
There's a few things wrong with it, I think. For me, you know, we talked about having to carry your iPhone to go on a jog.
Okay, so this is a great, exactly.
That's a bummer, and I'm sure Apple's going to fix it in, you know, the second or third generation. But that's also a thing I'm like, well, why jump on board on version one when the second and third versions are going to be, like, the more exciting products, you know?
So what Buster's talking about, so there's infrared sensors in the back of the watch, as you probably saw, that can detect your pulse and measure the intensity of your activity. There's accelerometers that track your movement. But in the keynote, they said that the iPhone and its GPS and Wi-Fi were needed to track your movement on distance activities, so runs and biking. So I'm thinking to myself, I wear very, very small running shorts. I mean, they're almost not legal. And when I'm running, where am I going to carry a 5.5-inch iPhone that needs to be present in order for my iWatch to deliver on the physical activity tracking that has been much touted? Yeah. You know what I mean? How is it? I hope that I'm wrong in that it's not going to be necessary, and maybe you could sync when you get back or something. But, you know, if it doesn't have a GPS unit in it, it's not going to be able to tell, as far as I'm aware, where you're actually going, and it's not going to be able to paint a path for you.
Yep.
So you might need to have your giant iPhone with you. That's a pretty big bummer.
Right.
I think definitely. So, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Because people are complaining that it doesn't work with Android either, right? You have to have an iPhone for it to be...
Oh, brother. Facepalm.
Yeah.
It's like, well, it's like saying your Galaxy Gear doesn't work with your iPhone. It's like,
I know, but it's related. It's not a standalone device.
That's true. It's they said that you absolutely have to have an iPhone to have the full functionality of the Apple Watch. Although it can be used for telling time and for mobile payments, as far as I'm aware,
even if your iPhone is
not there.
Right.
Because I guess it stores that stuff in the secure enclave.
I wonder how you verify the payment there, though, if you don't need the iPhone around to do it, because you verify with Touch ID on the iPhone.
Well, because when you put it on, you put a code in, and then it knows when it's attached to your arm, because it can detect your pulse. So
does it have biomarkers for you, so it identifies
it's just as soon as you take it off, it knows it's been taken off and it resets.
Doesn't identify your own.
No, not you personally.
Stuff. No, that's a bummer.
Some of the other notables about the Apple Watch, it has an activity app that will, track your movement and encourage you to burn more calories by standing and increasing your brisk activity, which could be walking or anything faster than walking. And I thought also Jay Blahnik was in the marketing video, and he was talking about how people need to stand more, and the Apple Watch will help you do that. As somebody who's recently started using a standing desk, I think that's right on. If you could just stand more during the day, you burn way more calories, even though you're not really being much more active. Dedicated workout app tracks your walks and runs and your bike rides and stuff, but you're going to have your iPhone with you, it seems, which is kind of weird. Not to mention, Leander, I think you may have written the piece about how the watch is not waterproof. It's actually only water resistant. Is that right?
I think that's a little bit unclear. I didn't write that piece, no, but that was based on something that David Pogue, I think, asked, right, Buster? Okay.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think it's still a bit unclear.
They said it had a waterproof speaker and that it was water resistant.
I mean, so you could use it in the rain, but if you're a triathlete and you need to take it in the lake to measure your fitness activity,
see,
obviously that would be a problem.
Yeah, the rumor was that it would be able to go 30 feet deep, but if... You know, you can't even splash it with water. You know, how's it going to stand my sweat?
Yeah, Buster sweat especially. Comes down like a spring rain. No indication on battery life from Apple officially, although we're hearing it needs to be charged every night, just like your iPhone. Hopefully that actually ends up not being twice a day.
That's going to be a big problem, because they've got it's a high definition screen and it's got a bunch of sensors. It does so many different things. It's almost impossible to get a battery in the size of a watch to get a battery that would last, for a long time.
Yeah.
And this is a problem with all smartwatches that I've heard. I mean, they're all struggling with battery life.
Well, people said the same thing about the iPhone too. Remember that in the early days? Cause cell phones used to last a week. Mm-hmm. Without a charge, and then people got used to charging their phones overnight.
I think it'll get better by the third version. I think you'll probably have 3 to 4 day battery life.
Well, I have to say the inductive charging, like that little MagSafe inductive charger they have, seems really cool. So you're not always plugging in your watch.
I'm kind of bummed out about that. I think it's like an extra hassle, because if you have your iWatch, which is required with your iPhone, you have to have a lightning cable to charge your iPhone, but then you're going to have to have an extra cable with that MagSafe thing for your iWatch to charge it every day as well.
Wait a second.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a good point.
So
Apple's doomed.
I just think they should just make it as an attachment for a lightning cable, so you can charge your iWatch from a lightning cable too.
Yeah. Well, can I bring up another point about having to charge it every night? So one of the things I love about fitness trackers that I've used is you strap them on your wrist, at, come nighttime, and they measure your sleep. And this is going to be a replacement for those kinds of devices. And yet I didn't hear anything about if it can track your sleep. And if it could, I mean, would it have the battery life to be able to do such a thing? Because you need to be charging it at night.
When you take off your iWatch to charge it, you put on your Jawbone up to go to sleep.
So now you got to have two. That's their official
solution.
You're going to
have a different wearable for each activity.
Right. So, I mean, now you have two
shower,
fitness devices. Yeah, that's another good point. If it's not waterproof, Leander, I mean, do you want to always be taking your fitness device on and off? I mean, it feels like it should work in the shower.
I know I will never, you know, there will be days where I go without an Apple Watch, because if I have to charge it every night, I won't remember to put it back on, you know?
Right.
Exactly. And, you know, what if you go overnight, you forget the charger, you stay out somewhere, you know, it's dead in the morning.
Yeah.
It definitely looks like an interesting first version product. We should also mention, very notable, this is the first product that has been created without any input from Steve Jobs. That's what Tim Cook said in a recent interview. So this is a big deal on so many different for so many different reasons. I mean, besides the fact that Apple hyped this thing up to an extraordinary level with that countdown, and then you know, this being the first product post Steve Jobs that he had no input on whatsoever.
The mood felt like really celebratory from the keynote.
Yeah,
that way from there, Leander?
Yeah, definitely. And all the designers and all the Apple staffers are like really pumped about it. Like they seem very, very confident. They really think they've got something special here.
Huh. It sure seemed like it. And
Tim as well joined the thing. You know, he explicitly said that it was like a new chapter in Apple's history, and he compared it to the Mac and the iPod and the iPhone.
He did the Rocky dance when he came out on stage. Did you guys see that later? That was one of my favorite parts. He was on fire.
When he was raising his fist.
He was doing the fist bumps everything.
Did you see Colbert's reaction to it?
No, I didn't.
Oh, he did the same thing, only like as soon as like Tim Cook like raises his fist, he like, you know, starts pumping his, and he takes off his watch and smashes it on his desk.
I'm sure there were so many journalists in pure ecstasy during that announcement. Especially, oh my gosh, how can we not mention the one more thing?
Yeah.
I just about shot myself when I heard him say that.
He was just too happy to say it, I thought. Oh,
I thought it was very apropos. I mean, that I'm so happy that he brought that back. I know we've talked about that on shows in the past, and it seemed like something that died with Steve Jobs, and I'm so happy that it's living on now. It's a piece of Steve Jobs that they could have at these presentations, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, it's so Steve Jobs to do that, especially on a product that's been so hyped for so long that we knew virtually nothing about, and yet everyone was expecting to be announced. For him to say that, I lost it. It was an emotional moment for me. It was an emotional moment for me. I may or may not had to change my boxer briefs shortly thereafter. I just thought it was very cool as someone who's watched a lot of keynotes in the past and was always waiting, hinging on that moment, right? Where you thought it was over and then Steve Jobs is like, there's one more thing. Leander, did you lose your mind at that moment? Did you start crying?
No, I didn't lose my mind.
Did you start crying like those girls were seeing
the
Beatles
for
the first time?
I have mixed feelings about him bringing it back. You know, I feel like it was kind of a nice tribute, and I think, you know, like a one-off is pretty good. I think it's hard, you know, the keynotes aren't the same, and I think they, you know, I think they should change the format altogether, really, mm-hmm. to be honest. Mm-hmm. I think they should turn them over to Johnny Ive, but...
You know what? I said that before, and you totally disagreed with me.
No, I don't believe
so. Yes, I was like, I think Johnny Ive should be the head of these keynotes. He's a great, you know, person to have as a figurehead.
Oh, so I'm pretty sure Leander wrote a whole editorial about how they should.
I did, yeah.
To Johnny Ive.
I don't believe that. Don't search Google for that, people. Do not Google that. It's not true.
Yeah.
Well, I'm with you. I think that they should have him as the figurehead at these presentations, because especially after witnessing that exchange between, hey, look, I love Tim Cook. Y'all know I love Tim Cook. But that exchange between him and Bono was one of the most awkward things I have ever seen in my entire life.
Was it as painful live? Because it just looked so...
It was double painful, yeah.
It was like, do you got a button that could send this to my iTunes phone?
Oh, God. And it just kept going on and on and on. And I was like, for God's sakes, press the free iTunes button already. Just press it. Let me have the album and let's move on like this never happened.
Yeah, it was excruciating. It was really, really bad.
It felt like it was very unrehearsed. And as a huge U2 fan, I've heard Bono say on multiple occasions he hates rehearsal. So, like, he often likes just to go into the performance and just do it. And I'm kind of wondering if that's what happened here. If Tim Cook was like, let's rehearse this. And Bono was like, no, we're just going to show up and do it.
Probably.
And Tim Cook doesn't seem one to ad-lib superbly well.
Yeah. I mean, probably Bono's one of the only few people that would probably have that leverage to be able to say that, you know?
Yeah, exactly. He's like, I'm going to do what I want. And Tim Cook, you're going to listen. Any other thoughts? Actually, let me ask you this one more thing before we wrap it up here, guys. This event, we touted it as being somewhat historic going into it. As I mentioned multiple times, there was that countdown. And then, you know, Apple at one point, towards when we were getting close to the presentation, was actually forwarding all traffic from Apple.com to this live stream so everyone could watch it. So hyped more than anything I've ever seen from Apple. Did it live up? Did it live up to the hype? The event, Leander?
Not as clearly as, you know, like Steve Jobs introducing the first iPhone in 2007. I think actually, you know, the U2 thing kind of detracted from it because if, you know, it's like, well, what's the main event here? You know, it was like, I think they should have gone out on the high note of the watch and then not, you know, the you know, try to say it was like the you know, the free U2 album.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some I think were, the only other one I've really felt that there was a clear sense of history that I've been to was the iPhone one.
Mm-hmm.
And in the past, you know, you kind of look back and it was sort of only in the rearview mirror of history that you can sort of go, okay, well, that one was kind of more significant than I realized at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've sat through plenty where Steve got really excited about, you know, being able to send iPhoto cards and, you know, fairly small and not very exciting features, you know, of the software and stuff. So, you know, I think it might stand the test of time. I mean, I think this watch is going to be a big deal.
Buster, did you walk away satiated?
I think it was satisfied. It was probably the biggest Apple keynote they've had in, you know, quite a few years. You know, action packed. They went and, you know, the iPhone 6s are huge. The iWatch will probably be a giant product in a few years. So yeah, I think it'll be a pretty memorable keynote.
Yeah, it was for me too. I actually had a headache after it was all over. I should have went and got a smoke. I came away from it very happy. I'm thrilled with the new iPhones. They were everything I was hoping for, and I'm so excited to get a new iPhone. The Apple Watch, as we've talked about, a little less enthusiastic about, although I'm kind of with you, Buster. I think it's going to grow into a cool product. This is a very, you know, version one type device, and it may be kind of wacky and zany in certain ways.
No, do you think people are going to buy the gold ones? Because they're going to be expensive. I mean,
I think so.
Really? I don't see, those don't appeal to me whatsoever. I'm like, who buys one of those?
Just go ask your mom, and she'll be like, yeah, or any woman. That's what I did. Like, my girlfriend and my mom, both of them were like, yeah, the gold one's awesome.
The other thing about those, though, is who wears watches anymore? That's going to be the biggest battle, I think, for Apple, is to tell you why you need a watch that also does fitness when a lot of people just don't wear watches anymore.
Well, that's what I thought. But if it's compelling enough, people will start wearing them, won't they?
Yeah, I think you'll be surprised. I don't know. I had a buddy who's not into tech at all, came over to my house after, you know, last night and was just like, I need an Apple Watch, or, you know.
Really?
Stupid. Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Follow it at all, but, you know, had seen the pictures throughout the day and just like, yeah, it looks badass. I don't even know what it does.
I don't even know what it does.
I need it.
Does it even tell time? I don't even know. Well, I know we'll all be buying one, so when they go on sale sometime in 2015, you guys want to take bets? I'm guessing March 31st.
You think so? I'm going to guess February.
Q1 2015, and I'm like, you know, that probably means they need as much time as possible.
Early 2015.
Oh, I'm sorry. They did say that, early 2015. So I just assumed it was
July,
Q1.
June 15th then, right?
Sometime before this event next year where they debut the iWatch or the Apple Watch 2.0. Hey, there's another quick question. Do you guys think they'll upgrade this every year since this is kind of like a piece of jewelry?
That's kind of why I don't want to buy one. It's because I do think they will.
So you think every year we'll get a new iWatch, new improved?
Yeah, but you might not see the next one until like next February, you know, or 2016, I guess that would be.
Yeah, for those gold ones too. I wouldn't be surprised if those cost at least $1,000.
Yeah,
maybe those even more.
Pricey.
Leander, what do you think? Gold iWatch, how much?
Yeah, it's going to be $1,000 for sure. It's going to be $1,000 or even more. You know, but you know, a lot of people who spend a lot of money on a watch, they want to keep it, you know, as an heirloom and hand it down to their kids. And Jason Calacanis had an interesting idea that the guts would be user upgradable, so that you could keep the your investment in the enclosure.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, it's complete rubbish, but it's a nice idea.
It's like the whole thing is like encapsulated.
Yeah.
Not to mention the internals are like dipped in plastic. Johnny Ive said it's like all one piece. It's like it's just going to go right to the landfill. I would like to thank the person. I don't know who it was off the top of my head who sent me the photo of Christopher Walken holding the iWatch.
Oh yeah,
that was a great picture. Thank you for that. Alrighty, guys. Well, hopefully we helped you, you know, make your decision on which iPhone you're going to get. But we would definitely love to hear which one you're going to get and why on our Facebook page, facebook.com/TheCultCast. That's all the cult cast we have for you guys this week. If you want to hang out with us on Twitter and let us know what you thought about the Apple events and all the different products that were announced, I'm at Arifon, Buster's BST3R, Leander's L. Caney. And of course, definitely follow Cultimac on Twitter. I'm sure, Leander, how many stories are going to be coming out a day about all this stuff? Like 1,000 at least?
Yeah, at least.
At least 1,000. So keep your eyes on at Cultimac. This has been the Cultcast, the best 30-plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the Cultcast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening. Hey, stay tuned for the sound bites of what all of our listeners thought and some special guests as well. Those are coming up next. And we'll see you guys next time. We got through it all.
Yeah, sorry. Good luck with that.
Yeah, hey, thanks. All right, guys.
Okay.
Keep it real for the rest of the day.
Hi, this is Lee Ellis from the UK. After watching the keynote yesterday, I have a message for Apple. With the iPhone 6 Plus and the Apple Watch Sport. Shut up and take my money.
Hi, I'm Nick and I'm from Glasgow in Scotland and I have no idea which version of the iPhone 6 I'm going to go for. Help!
Oh, maybe I'm not ready. Hold on.
Hey, wait a second.
Hold on!
Guys, I'm here with Mr. MattCast, Adam Christensen himself. I had to beg him and he made time to talk with us today. Let me ask you this. Are you satiated with Apple's new iPhones, and which one are you getting?
Satiated? Engorged might be more.
This is from Eddie, otherwise known as Ed MF Perez on Twitter, and I really like the new iPhone and the bigger iPhone, but the iWatch or Apple Watch currently looks like a very Generation 1 product, so I'll probably hold off on that for now.
This is hot chocolate from Starbucks. Just one small point. It's amazing how everyone just forgot about reversible lightning cable.
This is Vladi from Seattle. I'm not that excited about the iPhone 6. It's just a bigger screen, and the ugly lines in the back make it look terrible. Very excited about the Apple Watch. I'm just concerned about how much it's going to cost, and ready to get rid of my wallet with Apple Pay, so super stoked.
Hi, this is Richard from the UK. I'm really liking the look of the new Apple Pay system. I'll just hope that obviously they bring it over here very soon. I think it looks neat, works quickly, and should revolutionise how we pay.
This is Owen McGuire in Memphis, Tennessee. I printed off the sample sheets for the iPhone 6 and iPhone 6 Plus, and the 6 Plus feels way too big. I think the 4.7-inch screen will be perfect.
You guys, I'm really excited. I'm here with the Instagram prince himself, the Insta prince, Corey Stadaker, aka With Hearts, with over what, like 850 million followers on Instagram, Corey?
Yeah, times two. No,
times two to the second power. What did you think about the new releases?
I was like, what is this Chinese translation going on at first? But no, product wise, it's amazing, dude. I'm so pumped. I'm gonna get, drum roll.
I think I know.
Do you really? So I'm gonna get the iPhone 6 Plus.
Yes.
And
I saw you tweeting during the keynote. You were pretty excited, it seemed, about the Apple Watch being able to control your iPhone camera with that.
Yeah, I'm so pumped for that thing. It's going to be way better than we think. I mean, even launching with like third-party app integration is just, it's so cool. I don't know. I'm like blown away.
This is Elliot from Fort Hood, Texas, and I think the emoji looks like Steve Ballmer, and I am super excited about getting a 5.5-inch screen.
Hi, this is Joel Jupp. I'm from someplace, and I don't want to tell you where. And
I was really excited to hear about the iWatch now that I have Airfon as the background on my iPhone and Buster as the background on my iPad. Now I can have an animated Leander head on my wrist wherever I go.
Guys, I'm thrilled to be here with Lewis Helsentiger of Unbox Therapy on YouTube.
Thank you.
It's great to have you here because you get to, on your YouTube channel, which is hugely popular, you get to review all sorts of Android gadgets, Android phones, the Android watches that have been coming out. How do you feel about Apple's two new iPhone 6s? How does the new Apple Watch compare to the Android offerings out there?
One of the things I'm most excited for is on the larger model, having the optical image stabilization on the camera. That's probably the most killer feature. And then on the watch front, I like the Android Wear approach in the sense that any hardware manufacturer can come along and do their own sort of design twist on it. Now on the Apple side, Apple obviously has a long history of taking interfaces to the next level. So time will tell. At first glance, it looks promising, but it's hard to really gather too much from those really flashy, fancy videos they showed.
So you guys heard it here first. Lou thinks all these devices are going to be next level.
Is that what I said? Is that the concise version of what I said?